What is up, familia? D-Sprig here, sounding really groggy because we woke up early to watch X-Men 97. I mean, obviously, we saw the first three episodes at the premiere, but, you know, we were very excited at the premiere. We had hit the bar at the Roosevelt before with Luigi and my husband, Jeff. So we had such a fun time, and the entire night just went so fast that, you know, I wanted to wake up again at 3 a.m. and watch the premiere of X-Men 97 and sort of absorb everything. And I got to tell you, upon my second viewing, anything I said about pacing out the window, pacing is phenomenal here. So, familia, we are going to dive into a spoiler review of X-Men 97. I already posted some callbacks to the opening sequence, right? I compared it to the original, just screenshots. And some people have already been DMing me, spoilers, spoilers. And it's like, it's just the opening, relax. And they're just callbacks. So, you know, if you don't want any spoilers whatsoever, obviously this is not the episode for you because we are going to be diving very deep into spoilers. So you are now given your warning. I'm not going to talk about episode three. We are not going to discuss episode three, but we are going to discuss episodes one and two, the ones that premiered on Disney Plus. So 3, 2, 1. Oh my God, familia. It's great. It's so great. Oh my God, that ending in episode two with the real Jean coming back saying, I need the X-Men. And then it just cuts to presumably Maddie. But did you notice a difference in their skin tones? The Maddie Jean is a lot more paler than the real Jean because she's tanner, which probably doesn't make sense because she's in a hospital gown. So presumably she's been out of sunlight. But these are small, minor details. I can forgive it, obviously, because you need those visual cues to separate them. But oh my gosh, and everything with Storm. Oh my God. Now you know why she has a mohawk, familia. Now you know why she has the mohawk, because they're doing her deep powered story from the 80s, Life and Death. Those are the Life and Death is literally the name of the comic, and those are literally in the episode's release. So I didn't even know going into it that Storm was going to be depowered. But the second I saw those titles, I was like, oh, Storm's going to be depowered and presumably going to meet up with Forge, right? Because that is the comic. And Poe DeMaio, who is the series creator, respects the source material. So that's it. That is why we have the Mohawk, familia. For everyone who has been so angry about this Mohawk, they're just trying to be comics accurate. And I know the counter is, well, it doesn't need to be comics accurate. She's had that mohawk for a while. It's just like, they're respecting the source material. That's it. This is a story that happened. These creators, both of mine, all care about where these stories originated from, and they're paying homage and respect and adapting them. So the mohawk, I thought, looked great. If you've been paying attention to the clips and trailers they've been releasing out there, there does seem to be a quick screenshot of Storm with longer hair. So we can assume there will be some kind of time jump going on in the series, right? They even alluded to a Hellfire Gala. I can't imagine that they're going to give an Easter egg to a Hellfire Gala in this episode or in these episodes and not actually give us a Hellfire Gala. So my theory is, and I don't know this, but my theory is that we are going to get a time jump, or time is going to pass within the series. Now, familia, for those of you who may be upset that Storm is being depowered, relax. She gets repowered again in the comics. There is no way they're going to let her stay depowered forever. She will eventually get repowered. Maybe it's going to be a mid-season. Maybe it's going to be the season finale. But I have to tell you, one of the things that they told us, the Lee Waltz told us back when we had them on the podcast a couple of years ago, is that they had nothing to for Storm to do. Storm was awesome. She was iconic. But when you look at the actual substance of her stories, she doesn't really have a major story, something to do. They've given her something to do. They've adapted a very big, iconic story for Storm. So if they're going to do Life and Death, presumably we're going to get her with Forge. I want to see that iconic moment where Storm bows down on the floor and says, I was going to say yes, in reference to Forge's proposal to her. I mean, obviously, they're going to adapt it and change it a little bit, but oh my God, I love it. I thought X-Men 97 was perfect. There's so much to talk about. I don't even know where to begin, but why don't we dive into the characters, and we're going to talk about the characters, and through that, you know, the overall plot for these two episodes is going to be fleshed out. All right, let's start off with our boy Cyclops. Cyclops is giving zero fucks, Familia. He doesn't care. He literally is just being a badass leader. Now, do you understand what I said? He kind of reminds me of just being a Boy Scout while also being Tony Stark. I mean, he is giving zero fucks, but he's still getting stuff done. I think Cyclops is really grappling with coming to terms with that maybe this is a team effort, that the X-Men don't need a leader, especially when we find out that in Xavier's will and testament, he left everything, the team, the mansion, everything to Magneto. And Cyclops has heard about that. But, you know, Jean is there and she is here. I'm like, Jean is there. Air quote, Jean. It is obviously Maddie. Maddie Jean is like, hey, you know, the Xavier obviously had a reason for this. And I have to tell you, I think after Xavier's air quote death, which Gyrick is being charged with, Gyrick is being charged with Xavier's assassination. They haven't mentioned him being off world. They even give the team, what Cyclops receives, a death certificate. But you know, maybe we'll get more of that on the back end. But I think following Xavier's death, Cyclops really wanted to step up. I think that is extremely evident. And I think, I don't want to say he's overcompensating, but I think he's embraced himself as the leader he needs to be against humanity. But obviously, Xavier left everything to Magneto, and Jean wants to start a normal life. And this is a callback to season one, where Jean's like, Scott, if we have mutants, they'll be different, just like us. And Scott's like, I won't have it any other way. Well, I mean, look at the situation they find themselves in. Xavier is, air quotes, dead. Cyclops is leading the team. Jean is pregnant. And Jean is like, this baby is going to be reminded all the time that he's a mutant and that he's going to always have to watch his back. And she really wants to live a life outside of the X-Men. This Jean, this Maddie Jean, wants to live a life outside of the X-Men. So beautiful. So incredibly, incredibly beautiful. Oh, gosh, I love it. So, Jean, within these first two episodes, we find out she is clone Jean, Maddie. She is Maddie. And she gives birth to baby Cable. The baby is Cable. This, I mean, listen, within the first 5 minutes of the episode, we found out that the baby was a boy. If you had the Marvel Legends Madeline Pryor, the baby is clearly a boy. Had it been a girl, the baby would have had red hair and green eyes, you know, to indicate it was Rachel. So the fact that it's baby Cable, nothing to be surprised about. We know Cable has played a role in the series. Back in Time Fugitives, when Jean read Cable's mind, she saw a red-haired woman with sinister DNA, right? All of that was sort of alluded to. Maybe the DNA was the techno-organic virus, whatever it was. But Jean read Cable's mind. And so we knew that there were parental ties between those three. How it was going to shake out, we didn't know. But here we are. So the baby is Cable. That is very accurate to the comics. And the other thing I liked about Jean, and since we were on the subject of Storm, I really love the sisterly relationship between Storm and Jean. It is beautiful. It has been said in the series, especially Storm, as I said in my first impressions review, when Storm was like, she is someone that I love like a sister during the Dark Phoenix saga, but we actually never did see their relationship shake out, Familia. We never saw their relationship shake out in terms of being sisters. So The fact that Jean and Storm sat down and had a conversation about the baby and what it meant to be a mutant, and Storm acknowledging that she found the X-Men because she was a mutant and that they have a sisterly relationship. Oh my God. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And by the way, there is another scene in the next episode. No spoilers, but there is a scene where that sisterly relationship is alluded to again, and I think it is absolutely brilliant and beautiful. Morph and Jubilee, just to tackle them really quickly, they're in the background here. We know Jubilee is going to get a spotlight episode coming up that is out there already in the titles that Disney themselves has released. So not much to talk about Jubilee, except the new voice actress is incredible, absolutely nails it. And she and Sunspot obviously have a very interesting relationship. Now, is it romantic? I don't know if they're going to lean into a romantic relationship. I think in many ways, Sunspot is this cocky, arrogant kid who's coming to terms with being a mutant. And Jubilee sees a lot of herself in him because she was a cocky young teen who rebelled against being a mutant and being an X-Men and sort of, at the time was a Bart Simpson character on the team, right? Our mall rat, our mall rat, or what do they, what else does Storm call her? I'm forgetting. But oh no, I'm thinking of the, does a mall rat like chili fries? And that was Rogue. But I think Jubilee sees herself as a big sister to Sunspot. I think that's very, very clear. And I think it was very beautiful that both of them found that common ground. Maybe is this alluding to Jubilee possibly becoming a member of Generation X one day? Right. I mean, the fact that now she is no longer the youngest person on the team, she's mentoring Sunspot. Could we see Generation X in the future? That's my hope for X-Men 97, that it's gonna spawn out a X-Force team, a Generation X, a Hellions, whatever team, Excalibur. That's sort of what I'm hoping that we could get out of X-Men 97 or all these spinoffs. But my question is, Jubilee, though, at the end of the series, had more of her Generation X look with her hair a little bit longer, and that has totally regressed. She is back to looking the way she did in the series. But that's how I would sort of sum up my feelings for Jubilee. I'm excited. I think I really want to see more out of her in terms of being the big sister, transitioning into a more senior member of the X-Men. I think that is the logical route that Beau and the entire team has decided to go with Jubilee. And again, similarly with Morph, the reason why I was lumping her and Morph together is because they don't really have much to do in this episode. And Morph, we get a lot of Easter eggs through Morph. He shapeshifts into Archangel when the X-Jet explodes, when the Sentinels attack the X-Jet, and he obviously turns into Sabretooth. Now, he turns into Sabretooth at the end when Wolverine is on the tree upset. He turns into Sabretooth and starts throwing like Doritos at him or chips, whatever it was. I thought it was very cute. I think the Wolverine and Morph relationship, that buddy relationship that people were all up in arms about in the press material, is very adorable. They have a nice little bromance going. Is it more than a bromance? I think in the next episode, there's going to be something people are going to latch on to. How about that? That's a very minor spoiler. I'm sorry. But just there is something in the next episode that if you're paying attention, you're going to be like, oh, wait a minute. And I personally love it, but I saw it at the premiere and I was like, oh, people are going to latch on to this and they're going to be nasty about it because it's the internet in 2024. And even though there used to be innuendos back in the day, now people just will see anything and latch on to it. But through Morph, I think we're going to have something in the next episode and people are going to be like, meh, about it. But it's unfortunate. Now, in the opening credits, we do see that Morph is still haunted by Sinister. Is that going to be something that plays out now, especially since we have confirmation, we have clone Jean, Maddie there. I think it's going to be a safe bet that Morph is going to have to be dealing with a lot of his trauma with Sinister, which is something he grappled with in the original series. Okay, so we've talked about Storm, we've talked about Cyclops, Jean, Morph, Jubilee, Rogue. Oh my God. First of all, Lenore Zann killed it, as well as Allison Seeley Smith and Jennifer Hale. All the voice actors killed it, but Allison Seeley Smith and Lenore Zann deserve whatever awards they give for voice acting. Sorry, Familia, I really am groggy, so I'm trying to formulate my thoughts here because this is just a raw reaction. Not that I ever have notes, but I'm usually a little bit more prepared at sitting down and ready to discuss things. And here I'm just like, oh my God, spewing out everything. But Rogue, she delivers Bibbit Cable. She siphons the doctor's memories because they refuse to give Jean a mutant birth because her powers could go out of control and destroy the hospital. Listen, from an insurance perspective, I get it. They still haven't worked that out. I get it. The practical adult in me is like, oh gosh, she destroys this hospital and kills people while giving birth. That's going to be a major liability. We're going to go bankrupt. Horrible the world we live in. But that doctor was an asshole. What an asshole was that? That doctor was. And Rogue just comes up to him and siphons his memories. And I was like, I wonder if Rogue is going to get in trouble for that. I mean, because Rogue not only steals your memories, but this is like a degree he paid for. And he also, but it also physically hurts him. I hope the Xavier estate is equipped to deal with lawsuits or has like a fund for lawsuits. But the major thing with Rogue is that she and Magneto are a thing. And I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming, not because anyone spoiled it for me, but because when we had Lenore Zann on the podcast like 3 years ago, I made a comment of like, oh, you know, in the comics, Magneto and Rogue, you know, who is Rogue's true love, Magneto or Gambit? And she kind of gave like a coy, you know, response. And she was like, I guess we'll wait and see or something like that. And I was like, oh, you know, that means that they are doing a Magneto, Rogue, Gambit love triangle. And I love it. Obviously, this is a callback to Age of Apocalypse, where Magneto can touch Rogue because of his powers. He has an electromagnetic field that he can put around his skin and he can touch Rogue. I'm all for it. They alluded that something happened between them before. Was it during the Savage Land episodes? You know, that's another thing I want to say about this series. Is that it is evident a lot has happened in the back end, not only with like Rogue and Magneto. There was something that happened there. But Bishop, why is Bishop stranded here in time, in the present? Did he come back for a specific mission? I wonder if we're going to find out about that. As I said in my first impressions review, Bishop really is sort of just on the team right now, and he uses his powers. At the end of the next episode, it will be evident where his story is going. So, if you're a big Bishop fan and you're like, well, Bishop is just sort of there, why is he there? They don't answer why he's there, but where is his story going? I think you're going to see in the next episode and you're going to be pleasantly surprised. And as I said, I thought what was really curious about Bishop is that when they adapted Days of Future Past in the 92 series, they included Bishop. It looks like they're adapting a story now and including Bishop. Where, I mean, was Bishop part of? Yeah, technically in some aspects, but like in the actual main story, really wasn't. But we'll discuss once we review episode three. I'm not gonna spoil that here, but yes, Bishop and Rogue, so happy to see them on the team. Beast dude's just kind of like hanging out there. But let me tell you, what a jerk Beast was waking up a sunspot while he was sleeping in the infirmary, hanging upside down, singing. I was like, Beast, oh, you awful human being. He was injured. He was being hunted by the friends of humanity. How dare you do that to him? Let the kid sleep. But minor things just to hate Beast. But so excited to see George Buzza back as Beast. I listen, this is a beast we love hanging upside down. They alluded to Bishop's time band that he was trying to fix it. He is our resident guy there, quotes all over the place. And I truly, truly love just this version of Beast. And Gambit, poor Gambit, poor Gambit. That last scene with Rogue leaving Xavier slash Magneto study and him just bowing his head, holding his card, like he's ready for a fight, but he's too heartbroken to fight. Oh, Remy. And hello, eye candy, Remy. I mean, really, Remy shirtless. Oh my God. Like for basketballs, when they come back from their mission and he's wearing a crop top and the mission from Rust Green Sunspot. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So, so hot. I mean, he's eye candy. So as of right now, you know, Remy's story is being positioned with Rogue and Magneto. That's sort of where we're at. I'm so excited. It's amazing. This is genius. This is the X-Men. We love action and drama. That is such a weird tightrope to walk with the X-Men, but action and drama, chef's kiss. All right. Wolverine, we kind of already tackled with Morph, but I said in my notes is that Wolverine is the heart of the team in so many ways, and you sort of see it here. He's devastated that Jean and Cyclops want to leave the team. I mean, he's obviously in love with Jean, but this does not sit well with him. He has a special relationship with Morph. They have a very buddy-buddy relationship. He has a special Jubilee and him relationship. You know, he is her... He is her mentor. She is his sidekick. Wolverine is in so many ways the heart and soul of this team, of this iteration of the X-Men, and he's the one driving Jean to the hospital. We'll see where we're going with him. You know, I like Wolverine quite a bit. For me, Wolverine and Rogue are sort of the flagship characters of this show, but I haven't really inquired on Tia on Wolverine because I trust whatever they're going to do with Wolverine, it's going to be a big iconic story. But I think he is going to have his hands full in the next episode because the woman he loves has been a clone. And I'm so happy to see Maddie. Obviously, there is something going on with Gyrick and Master Mold because when Jean goes into Gyrick's mind, she says, there's someone else here. Now, who could that be? You know, are they going to bring back Nimrod? Is Nimrod going to come back online? These are questions I think we should be posing in terms of who is a bigger bad. I'm assuming that's sort of the mystery here because Jean's like, I sense someone else. You know, I'm trying to steer clear of something like Shadow King, right? Because that really wouldn't make sense in terms of Gyrick and Master Mold and everything that's going on there. So my mind goes more to other robotic evils like Nimrod coming online. Would they do something like Nimrod again, revisit that? Well, I don't know. Maybe it would be a newer villain out there that we just haven't seen before. Let's see. Let's see where they're going to go with it. We can speculate in another episode about that. But, you know, Madeline, let's see where her story is going to go. Magneto is obviously very, has a lot to do. I told you the voice actor was great, by the way. A lot of us, when we heard like the end of the trailer, we were like, oh, what is this? And it's like, no, his delivery is perfect. All the voice actors. They brought the A game. And again, I sort of was angry about the pacing. Not angry about the pacing. I said that would have been my note. It would have been the pacing. And no, it just wasn't that. It truly wasn't. And Executioner is in here. And he's the one who shoots into Power Storm. It's so hard to defend him. I was like, he's going to be a one and done villain. And nope. I mean, maybe he is a one and done villain, but he certainly is the villain who like depowered Storm. So much. Familia, I told you, so much happens. These episodes are only like 30 minutes and so much happens in them. Like, oh my God, Familia. Like, I just, incredible. I cannot believe how good this is such a well-written series. Magneto's speech was incredible in this. And by the way, this is what I was talking to you about. Do you guys remember in X-Men 3 when Mystique takes the bullet for Magneto and Magneto's like, oh, darling, you're no longer one of us. and like walks away from Mystique. And it's like, I remember being in the audience, be like, why is Magneto walking away from Mystique? She literally just got hit with the cure. She is now depowered. This is what Magneto is trying to fight against. Brett Ratner honestly did not understand the mutant metaphor. Bodemio does, because when Storm takes the shot for Magneto, Magneto's like, look at what you did. And Magneto understood that this was devastating to hit a mutant and make her depowered. Thank you, Bo, for fixing that scene, because that always bugged me so much about X3. Because listen, we like action. There's so much action here, but there is also drama and metaphor within the X-Men. That's what makes it a really great IP. And if you don't understand the mutant metaphor, if you don't make that mutant metaphor applicable to general audiences, and also flesh out these characters, if you're going to have Magneto be like, oh, she's no longer one of us. What a pity. She was such a beautiful creature before. Like, literally, no. You're trying to defend your fellow mutants against being cured, and she is the first soldier down. That always bugged me about X3. Bo fixed it here in X-Men 97. Storm takes the shot. She is depowered. She is human, and it is devastating. Magneto understands that this is devastating, and this is not acceptable from humanity, and she is the first victim in this war. But I'm telling you, Storm is going to have a lot to do. Do not get angry. I can already see the internet rioting, be like, they depowered Storm. They depowered Storm. It is a character journey for her. This is from the comics. I would not get too worked up about it. She will be repowered soon enough, and we're going to get lots and lots of great stories with Storm. But yeah, Amelia, we'll do another breakdown with Flink in the coming days and chat about this. But what were your first impressions of X-Men 97? Did you enjoy it? The opening, the character stories. Slide into our DMs and let us know.